The biggest change to the continuing education program in 25 years is underway. On this episode, we hear both the firm and regulatory perspectives as we learn more about the CE Council's efforts to transform continuing education. Welcome to FINRA Unscripted from FINRA's Chicago District Office. I'm your host, Caitlin Kiernan. I'm pleased to welcome back to the show John Colon, FINRA's Senior Advisor to Registration and Disclosure, and a new guest today, Jeff Freiberger, Chief Compliance Officer of Baird and, relevant to today's conversation, member of the Securities Industry Regulatory Council on Continuing Education, or the CE Council. John and Jeff, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So we wanted to have you here on the show today to talk about recent changes to the continuing education program. But before we dig into that, Jeff, what is continuing education?
Continuing education is a way for the registered individuals in the industry to keep up with whether it be product, rules, events in the industry, so that they can really take care of their clients in the right way and service the industry in the right way.
And so what different kinds of continuing education are there?
Well, primarily there are two types. In the industry, we have firm element education, which is really based upon firm needs, what type of firm it is, and what products and services they sell, and the nature of the registrations of the individuals at that firm. Every year, firms are required to do a needs analysis to determine what education they're going to offer within the firm for the registered folks and really tailor it to the firm. On the regulatory side, there's regulatory element education, and that's really mandated through the rules. And that at the moment occurs primarily every 3 years with registered folks, and they're required to take what's delivered to them through the industry regulators.
So on the regulatory element, it's actually a bit more diverse. It's actually a collaboration between the regulators and the industry. So FINRA has an administrative role with the CE program to administer the program, develop the content. And we actually work very closely with industry members that are registered persons in the industry to identify content, cases, scenarios that we feel that are important. So we work collaboratively with the industry on that. And as Jeff pointed out, the firms really do have control over what the firm element is going to cover for their registered persons.
Got it. So, John, when you say an administrative role, that means FINRA is managing the program, but it's not just dictating from above on what the program is.
Correct. So this really is a good segue into what is CE Council, the CE program, how did it all get started? Back in 1993, the current chair of the SEC asked the industry and the regulators to come together to develop a continuing education program that worked both for the regulators and for the industry. And that task force identified what Jeff talked about, the regulatory element and the firm element. And in 1995, a program was introduced to the industry. And at that point of time, it was NASD and NYSE that shared the responsibilities for executing on the development and delivery of the content. That's where it really came from. That was how the program became born, if you will.
And why is it so important for regulators to coordinate with the industry when developing these programs?
Well, it's important for us to understand how our rules are impacting the industry and their implementation. And one of the things that we do with the CE Council is we have very in-depth conversations with our content committee members about a rule, how it's being implemented, drawing upon their experiences that they've actually encountered. Some of our cases, people will say, that couldn't have happened. And all of our cases to date in the current format are drawn from real life examples a lot of times. So it's kind of like ripped from the headlines, if you will. But it's that practical day-to-day experience and working with the regulators to help the industry understand the nuances of a particular rule that's been just published and implemented and working with them to find the best way to develop that learning material.
Right now, the CE Council is working to transform the continuing education experience. And John, you mentioned that in 1993, the SEC chair asked for FINRA and the firms to come together. How does the CE experience of today look like the CE experience of 10 years ago?
Well, 10 years ago, we were delivering our continuing education program in testing centers. So you have to really go back to 1995 when we first implemented. At that point, NESD owned its own set of test centers across the U.S., and there really was a desire on the part of the task force to have a continuing ed program that was using the best technology at that point in time. And delivery via computer was really the most flexible way to do that and provide a great learning experience for individuals. So at the beginning, that's how we did that. In 2014 and 15, we converted from delivering in test centers to delivering online, a web-based program. The content format really evolved and changed around 2010 to become more of a learning-focused program. Prior to that, individuals really had to do some prep work before coming in. And one of the things that we learned through reviewing trends in learning management systems and developing learning content was that it really needed to be focused on that broad learning approach. And to do that, we reconceived the format of the cases and scenarios that we were presenting to provide not only the situation that was being experienced by a certain set of individuals, it could be a rep and their supervisor and a client, to also include resources and learning materials that an individual could reference. It may have been a topic area that they may not be as familiar with because they specialize as they grow in the industry. And that's how that changed back then. We've increased and decreased the number of programs that we've had. We first started off with the general program. That quickly evolved into including a program for investment company reps. And then we added on principals. And then in recent years, we added in the operations professionals, securities traders. And from that, we are actually kind of taking a step back with the CE transformation. So it's really kind of a constant evolutionary process for the CE Council in terms of looking at what the program is today and what it should be tomorrow.
Jeff, what is the goal of the latest cycle and transformation?
Well, I think it's really threefold. First of all, the regulatory element side, the council, through a lot of work with regulators, has really determined that it makes a lot of sense to propose that we go to an annual requirement without overburdening the industry. I think that's an important point from the industry side, that the amount of time, the cost, et cetera, should be fairly level with what it's been in the past historically. And at the same time, we'll be able to deliver quicker to market with regard to products, with regard to current events, with regard to new rules, than we have been in the past on a three-year cycle. The other couple points, first of all, with regard to firm element education, we really want the firm element side to be informed by the regulatory element. So the idea there is that through the CE Council, we would deliver to the industry prior to the end of the year information that they could use to help them structure and plan in their needs analysis for the coming year so that you wouldn't have duplication of topics and that sort of thing. So the industry will know what will be covered in the coming year in regulatory element and be able to work with that to build their firm element. And so there's timing issues there as well. Doing it on an annual basis, it just matches up better with the firm element requirement to do the regulatory element in the same time frame and not be on a different cycle. The last part of this is really about folks who wish to maintain their qualifications while they're out of the industry. And as in many professions, I think the industry folks and the regulators have looked at this and heard a lot of feedback from the industry that the requirements that exist today really should be looked at. And we see people who leave the industry for a whole variety of reasons and then want to re-enter. And after 2 years, they have to re-qualify by examination. And that's something that's really been another focus of this thought process over the last couple of years, is how can we make that better within the industry? How can we retain people? Because I've seen statistics that say that people who leave the industry and are out more than 2 years actually really have a hard time making a decision to come back into the industry, that they're very well qualified for because they'd have to retest. It's our feeling from the council's perspective, and I think from the regulatory perspective, that we can do better than that as an industry. So that's the third element. The other piece here I think that's really important from the firm perspective is that FINRA and regulators and council have had a lot of discussion about how to structure firm element. And FINRA is really intent on making sure that all sizes and types of firms have a material that they need to do good educational programs. FINRA is looking at developing a content library, which I think would be helpful to large and small firms alike. And also through these proposals, really encouraging firms to utilize the other types of education that are going on at the firm. And there's a lot. Having been in the industry for decades now, I've seen it evolve. And it's really a daily process. So if there's a new rule being implemented that applies to a firm and its registered folks, cybersecurity is another example, AML training, people who have qualifications such as certified financial planners, we should look at that and say, that's continuing education. When a certified financial planner is doing their CE for CFP, it's relevant to what they do. And firms ought to be encouraged to look at that and sort of count that in their programs, probably differently than they have in the past.
That's great. So, Jeff, you mentioned allowing individuals to maintain their registration while they're outside the industry by taking continuing education. John, when we last talked on the podcast about the SIE exam, one of the things you mentioned on that podcast was also the attempt to help make the industry more accessible to those who are not currently in the industry. How are those two projects aligned?
Well, I think they're aligned from the perspective of providing people with opportunities to enter into the industry and then to stay in the industry. I think one of the things that we've, in our focus group work, have heard consistently is that it's difficult to retain talent, especially when they need to leave for a variety of personal reasons. That maybe they need to leave the industry for a period of time to raise children, to care for an elderly parent that is going through some difficult times. And this maintaining qualifications piece of the CE transformation really allows us to help out in that way. And it is key to understand here that council has asked the regulators to look at, is there a way we could modify our rules and develop a CE program that would maintain someone's knowledge base? So the maintaining qualifications program really is an outgrowth of the other recommendations. And moving to an annual program, we're looking to offer an annual program for those individuals that have left the industry, where they would complete not only the regulatory element, but they would also complete content that is selected based on the registrations that they are looking to maintain qualification for. And by doing that, they would get additional learning materials that they would need to complete on an annual basis so that when they would return to the industry, they wouldn't have to retake one of the qualification exams. So that's packed with a lot of information, and I know that folks are concerned about a lot of stuff going on with this. The annual program for these individuals would be substantial in terms of the additional learning material that they would need to complete. It's not going to just be the reg element. As Jeff mentioned earlier, the reg element is going to be pared back so that it's roughly a third of what folks see today on an annual basis, and that it's targeted learning to the registration categories. The maintaining qualifications piece is going to build on that, but it's going to build on in a way that for the qualifications that the individual is looking to maintain, that they get appropriate content to help them maintain their knowledge base.
So going back real quick to the moving to a one-year cycle from a three-year cycle, it makes sense that you don't want to wait 3 years when a new regulation has come into effect for someone to start implementing the education on that. But what concerns did you hear from focus groups on this about this change and making it more frequent?
We heard lots of different commentary from folks, some very supportive, some very concerned about the additional administrative load that that might create by having an annual CE program. And we got some great feedback. We got great ideas that we've considered and we're looking at. One of those in particular is that the regulatory element, as it's done today, everyone has their own CE window, which is based on their anniversary of when they first became registered. What we're looking to do is to provide the firms with maximum flexibility so that everyone is going to have a deadline that they have to complete their regulatory element by the end of the year. And that sounds very scary, but it really isn't, because what we're doing in that vein is we're giving the firms control over setting their own deadline for the reg element and firm element. And this actually was an idea that came from one of the firms in our focus group, was give me control over when the reg element is due, because what I really want to do is to pair together the delivery of my firm element content and the reg element program at the same time so that they had the same deadline date, and this is from them, that'll minimize my overhead in terms of having to chase down the procrastinator. So by combining those two and making a common deadline, firms could make their deadline the middle of the year, beginning of the third quarter. They don't have to wait until the end of the year. But that really does provide them with the flexibility of being able to choose when they actually set that deadline. And I think that's a key difference between the program today and the program of the future.
A lot of the feedback that you got on this initially came from a FINRA request for comment to Reg Notice 1826, asking about the proposed enhancements. What else did you learn from that feedback?
Well, with that notice, it came off of the CE Council posting their proposed enhancements. So they posted on their website, here are the ideas that the CE Council is considering. And I think it's important to step back and remind everyone, Jeff mentioned earlier that there's roughly 15 to 16 industry members on council, but there's also four regulatory members as well. And with that, the regulatory members also have input into that. So that's the CBO, MSRB, and NYSE also contribute to that process. What we learned coming out of the comments that we received was people were generally supportive of the idea. They raised concerns, as I mentioned earlier, about the issue of having to track everyone each year in terms of doing this. So we're looking to build out new monitoring tools. And with the rebuilding of CRD, we're looking to build new tools in there. The other thing that we're going to be using is the financial professional gateway for individuals to come in and launch their CE sessions. That gateway will also provide individuals with additional information that they can look and monitor in their own records about what registrations the firms are carrying for them as well. So it's going to be a multi-purpose tool for reps to use, not only for CE, but other regulatory activities. So those comments really helped us to guide what we're doing in the reg element space. Firm element, firms are really hungry for additional guidance on what to do in the firm element space. And I think what Jeff talked about earlier with being able to recognize other learning that reps are doing to be included as part of that learning plan is a reasonable one. And in fact, firms have the flexibility to do that today because, as we pointed out, the firms have control over how they design that program. So there is flexibility for that. The third area is the maintaining qualifications. The industry is hugely supportive of this. They see some huge advantages to working with individuals that they're trying to retain. They want them to be able to come back to work, but a lot of individuals see that requalification process of having to pass a qualification exam yet again as a huge barrier. So we're looking to minimize that, and that's part of the regulatory notice that will be included in that.
So in September, the CE Council published a letter putting forth recommendations to the regulators on how to implement some of these changes. And then FINRA also published Regulatory Notice 2005. How do these two things play together?
Well, I think the letter represents how the council feels and really is a summary of the work that's been done by the CE Council over the last couple years. With everything that John and I have talked about, it really makes sense. The way I look at it is that we have over 600,000 registrants in the industry. What we do is really important in CE Council in that it's really important that folks who are registered in our industry who are serving the investing public really are up to date on things like rules, on things like products. And continuing education is a very, very important element of that. They do get it, as I mentioned, they get it sort of continuously. And I don't think it needs to be overregulated. In fact, I think this is a way for the industry to say, look, it's going to come more frequently. That's just the nature of the world. Things move a little bit more quickly. It'll be more coordinated. It'll be more resourceful.
And I think the other thing that we can't stress enough is the coordination between reg element and firm element, which we haven't seen in the past. Historically, we've always just created the regulatory element content with our content committees working with council, and we haven't shared what's coming up with the industry. In the new model, we're really talking about publishing the topics that are going to be covered in the regulatory element so that as the firms plan their firm element program, they can have an idea of what is going to be covered from CE Council's perspective on the reg element content, and then they can augment and supplement their program in a way that doesn't create redundancy that's not necessary.
I would add as well that I think FINRA and many others outside of the regulators did a wonderful job in looking at the needs of the industry with regard to the examinations that they had to take. So exam reform was a success overall. And I think this is the same sort of thing, that it's been a while. Not that we haven't made changes over the years to continuing education programs, but the rules have not been looked at. And frankly, I think it's a good time right now, coming off the heels of exam reform, to take a look at this. It just fits together well with what we've done in the past.
And with that, it really does allow us to build the content in a way that's targeted to each registration category, which is a huge change. Right now, we know that with the program, the way it's currently structured, it has to be very general, because we have on the rep level program, there are 22 different registrations that are subject to that CE program. And we're looking forward to changing the format so that we can actually target instruction to the registrations that someone holds, so that an individual that is a FinOp, for example, they currently take the 201 program, which has a lot of supervisory material in it, and they're not doing supervisory activities of reps. They're working on the financial and operational aspects for the firm. And we're looking forward to having a program that is tailored to each registration category so that they're getting the important content that is needed for them in the work that they do.
And so the recent reg notice is looking to implement these recommendations. What's the process for that?
So the regulatory notice that was just published contains a lot of what we're talking today, and it contains a great more detail. So I would encourage everyone to go and look at the regulatory notice and to submit comments. This is our call that we always do. We hear people that want to express concerns or have ideas. This is the industry and the public's opportunity to really chime in and provide. Once we get comments back in, we will consolidate those and provide feedback to the CE Council and to each regulatory organization. So it's not just FINRA that is publishing regulatory notice. The three other regulatory members of council, the MSRB, the CBO, and NYSE, will also be publishing notices at the same time. So we'll really use that feedback to come up with a final proposal that for FINRA, it will go to our Board of Governors for review and approval. And once we have that, we will then move to file it with the SEC for another public comment period, and looking for feedback again there, which could cause further revisions to the proposal and then ultimately implementation. With this, we know that firms are concerned about the timing of all of this. 2022 is what we're projecting right now, and that sounds like a long time, but it really isn't. If you think about the work that FINRA needs to do from an administrative aspect to introducing a new learning management system, to the firms that have to make changes to their systems. So this isn't just a matter of flipping a switch and people come in and do their continuing ed. The firms also need to adapt their technology systems to be ready for this transition. So much like we did with exam restructure when we introduced that, we had feedback from firms saying we need a little more time, and we adjusted our time frame accordingly. So it's a huge lift, not only for us, but it is for the industry. It's changing something that has been going on for 25 years in a particular format and cycle, and we're now really revolutionizing the program to create content that is much more focused, shorter bursts of learning material that individuals have that's targeted to their registrations. And we think creates a better program, but it's going to create some work for all of us.
I would add from the perspective of CE Council that the council would invite people who have questions with regard to the proposals, comments, not that they shouldn't file them in a written manner, but FINRA and council, I think, have done an excellent job of listening to the industry. Another way for us to listen is for folks to go to council members and express their opinions. We can carry that into the meetings and move forward with those ideas. CECouncil.org has a list of all of the council members there to contact, and the council represents large firms, small firms, medium-sized firms, different types of firms as well. So you ought to be able to find somebody there who you can talk to. And if you don't recognize any of the names, feel free to call me at Robert W. Baird.
Great. So that's it for today's episode. John and Jeff, thanks for joining me. We mentioned a bunch of resources, so we'll be linking to all of those in the show notes for our listeners. But if you have any ideas for future episodes, you can let us know at finraunscripted@finra.org. Until next time.
Please
Please note, FINRA podcasts are the sole property of FINRA, and the information provided is for informational and educational purposes only. The content of the podcast does not constitute any FINRA rule or amendment or interpretation to such rules. Compliance with any recommended conduct presented does not mean that a firm or person has complied with the full extent of their obligations under FINRA rules, the rules of any other SRO, or securities laws. This podcast is provided as is. FINRA and its affiliates are not responsible for any human or mechanical errors or omissions. Parties may not reproduce these podcasts in any form without the express written consent of FINRA.